Hey guys, welcome to episode 69 of the JV Club with my dear friend Jessica Makinson. I have taken a week off for the 4th of July. Listen, I'm going to be honest with you. I'm using the 4th of July as a national holiday as an excuse to not have released an episode. The reality is I am going to be gone for so long in Canada that I thought that I had recorded enough episodes in advance. The darned of it is. I am going to be there an extra week. And so I knew that I was going to need to take a hiatus. And as it turns out, what could be a better reason than the birth of our nation? So hope everybody had a splendid 4th of July. Sans JV Club podcast episode, and that you are looking forward to this episode airing this week with Jessica. She's a very dear friend of mine. I sort of encapsulate all the different things we've done together while I'm speaking with her in the episode, so I'm not going to spend a lot of time on that. I do want to get some shout-outs out there. I don't have many, and I'm going to be behind in shout-outs, guys, because I'm recording these intros well in advance. But I do want to thank Lou C. for trying to send me a letter. Lou, hopefully I'll get that letter at my post office box address. Julie M., thank you so much for the recommendation to watch the HBO documentary special, Miss You Can Do It. I cannot wait to watch it, and I thoroughly look forward to it. I feel that I'm going to be recommending it to the listener. Can we agree on that? So maybe I should preemptively recommend it, even though I've not watched it yet. Check out Miss You Can Do It. I want to acknowledge the brilliant artist Nan Lawson, who I reached out to because I love her artwork so much and I'm so obsessed with her that I wanted to see if she'd be willing to do something with me, and she's going to. But in the interim, I want to invite everybody to visit her Etsy shop. It's N-A-N, like Nancy and Nancy, N-A-N Lawson, L-A-W-S-O-N dot Etsy.com, nanlawson.etsy.com. Check it out. She's awesome. Andy R. on Twitter, Azol on Twitter, Lucy on Twitter. And then I also wanted to just thank First Draft Media for including me in a list of podcasts that they recommend there over in Australia. And I'm delighted to be in the company that I was listed with. So that's always a pleasure to see. That's it, guys. Enjoy the episode. And I can guarantee you you'll be looking forward to an even shorter intro next week because I'm about to record it and I don't have any shout outs left. Bye-bye.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Oh, it's on now.
This is a long time coming. Yeah.
I know. I was telling, guys, I was telling Jessica that it's rare that I mean, I do podcast a lot of people that I know. It's rare that I podcast that I know someone that I know so well that I don't want to cross over any border. I mean, listen, I can always edit stuff out too, but I don't want to cross over any lines where it's like, oh, I forgot that this is like not something that I wouldn't want everyone to know because we already know this about each other.
All my private information.
Yeah, just start spelling it out.
That's okay because we'll make it easy.
I mean, I'm not going to tell people that your address is da 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 da.
I do live on 1934 East da 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 da
da da da da Street. Oh, that's almost Arrested Development right there.
You make me want to sit on the floor.
I know, it's hard not. I know. Especially if it causes you any pain
it does.
Or anxiety.
I'm not going to not be able to play with
Also, Scott knows Jessica very well, so he is not ashamed to come bring loud toy over to start the process. Oh, yeah. Make him growl, because I don't think people have heard him growl before on the podcast. Put your hand on his eyes.
He doesn't like that, huh?
Yeah, and then he'll growl. Scott. Why aren't you growling? Daddy, why aren't you growling?
That was me, not him.
Yeah. Okay, here we go. Here we go. Now we'll get it. Now we'll get a growl.
I don't know what's happening.
This is like when the mother wants the child. Like, he does a really funny voice. Do it, honey. He'll do it in just a second. He does have a really good growl. Jessica knows I like, when he has a ball in his mouth, I like to put my hand over his face, which causes him to, I make it sound like I'm trying to start a motorcycle. Let me see if I can do it now. Okay, let me see if I can start my motorcycle up. It's not starting.
I do the same thing with Bijou about the motorbike, only I grab her ears like handlebars.
Oh, you can take it all the way. I can't do that because his ears are so short and sensitive that if I did that, he would just yelp instead.
Bijou has these big ears. If we're playing, I grab those ears and I rev them like a motorbike.
You can totally rev those ears. God knows you can rev those ears. Those are great ears. I've been thinking about how much I enjoyed our bike ride the other day.
Nice ride.
I ride a lot by myself, you guys know. And it was a joy to have a friend with me kind of tooling around on the old bicyclette.
That was nice.
We do need to get you a helmet.
Oh, yeah.
ASA possible.
I'd like a cute helmet, which is not necessarily the safest helmet.
Yeah.
But
I get it. I mean, I remember even when I was a kid riding. Did you ride a bike a lot when you were a kid?
Yes.
Yeah. Did you have to wear a helmet when you were a kid?
No.
Okay. I did because my dad's such a huge cycling geek that like he was riding hundreds of miles in a day and would like had everything. One of our rooms in the house was dedicated to bikes. So I had to have a helmet, the gloves, everything. Like he even had me wear bike shorts as a kid. And the helmets back then, they didn't even have helmets for kids. So it was like an adult size helmet with extra padding in it. And I just looked so stupid. And I had a crush on a boy that lived in my neighborhood, and I would like take my helmet, would stop my bike and take my helmet off to ride past his house and then put it back on after I passed his house so that he wouldn't see me with my helmet.
Mm. Well, you know, helmets are nerdy. That's just the nature of helmets.
I mean, people don't say that about motorcycle helmets. Do they?
I don't know, like old school helmets are cool.
Yeah.
Helmets in general are for protection.
Which is kind of a shame because I know what we need to convert it so that helmets are super cool. Scott, I need you to not whimper as much for attention from your girlfriend, Jessica.
You made a great helmet once.
Oh, yeah, for Fleeting Immersion. Oh, guys, you know I've talked about Fleeting Immersion on the podcast before, and Jessica is the other half of Fleeting Immersion, which I know I've named her by name. So I'm overjoyed to make that association as well.
That was a killer helmet.
It was like an it's
old
still here
white,
somewhere.
Old white cap helmet.
Yeah.
You changed the lining on the inside.
I got real crazy. Dang. I don't know if it's safe particularly, but
safe to be seen in.
That's literally all it is. It's for sure I've taken all the use like the real usefulness away from it and purely made it something aesthetic.
I rode my bike a lot. I had my dad worked for PepsiCo, so for some reason we got this Mountain Dew mountain bike.
Oh, okay.
That my dad put together for me. It was like this green Mountain Dew mountain bike, and I'm riding it around the streets of Tempe, Arizona.
Yeah, guys, Jessica and I are both from Arizona. There's many other parallels that you'll be unfolding for you as we speak. But, I mean, there's something so satisfying about like getting on, being a child and the escape of being on a bike opposed to just being on foot, like being able to get further away faster.
I feel bad for kids now. Like you're not allowed to just go ride bikes. It's like not safe.
I know.
But the lack of freedom, like you always have to be with a parent. I would have gone crazy.
I couldn't have done it. And by the way, my parents couldn't have done it. Like I don't, you know what I mean? I don't think that they needed like a break from me. They were going through a terrible divorce.
I was always glad to get out and go on a bike ride. It didn't matter how hot it was in Arizona. There was like stuff to see, like construction being built that you had to like break into. And
did you do that stuff?
Oh my God.
But that makes sense. Like development, Tempe, Arizona would probably have had a lot. They always have a lot of developments. Everywhere in Arizona has tons of developing always going on.
The house we were in was on the edge of where they had stopped building. So like all behind us and besides us was dirt for a long time. And that was really fun to like ride up and down and like, you know, motorized cars. And but then
when you say us, who's us, like neighborhood friends? Because you're an only child.
You know, I mean, for a long time, all the neighborhood kids near me, I feel like were boys. There was one girl lived exactly right next to me and we were best friends for a while. But
what was the age range like?
she was my grade, but all the boys felt like they were like either a couple years older or a couple years younger. So I always had this like weird disconnect of feeling kind of lonely, or like seeing if the boys would like want me to play. It's so weird to like the differences in that age where people don't really like, boys don't like girls and girls don't like boys.
Yeah.
Where you're like, oh, come on.
Yeah. Can't we make this work for this particular situation? Because we don't have a choice. But if they had each other and you were just trying to like, you know, did that make you feel like you needed to be more boyish, like for in those moments, or were you kind of a tomboy anyway?
I think it was, I liked the bike riding and the running around stuff. Like basketball, no. Yeah. Like I'm trying to think, like sport wise, I was never like,
yeah, I don't think
I was never good at team sports.
I guess I just wasn't that interested. I think I associated it with school, like, and like, I don't remember anyone ever inviting it into my life as a fun thing. It was always like, oh, that's PE. Like to me, when I was a kid, sports equaled PE, and that's school. And it's why like would work. I do? Yeah, and it's like work. Yeah. Yeah. It's like, why would I? I got to do that.
I just remember swimming always, because it was Arizona. You could always swim and have people over.
Did you have a pool?
We had a pool.
And this is when your parents were still together?
My parents split when I was like 15.
16. I thought that was a hummingbird. Really, it's just a huge beetle. Oh, it's less exciting.
But he still drank from the feeder.
Yeah, there you go.
So my parents split when I was like 16. So before then, there was just the three of us in the house in Tempe. And we had this great big backyard. And I had a little playhouse and the big pool, and then my parents had this rose garden
That's nice.
On their side of the backyard that had like plum tree and gorgeous roses. It's just this great yard.
And so they basically were like, you have this side of the backyard, but don't mess with the roses and the stuff.
No, I had there was like a cactus garden and a rose garden. And like,
oh my gosh, I've never seen pictures of this. This sounds awesome.
Fruit trees, and we had this pink grapefruit tree.
Oh my gosh.
And I had a chalkboard. We had this is an amazing backyard.
But yeah,
we had
it sounds like a wonderland.
We had this refrigerator in the backyard that was full of sodas.
Oh, you were totally the house that people wanted to come over to.
I was, but I feel like I didn't have that many people over. There was a couple times with these two boys that came over because I had a Nintendo early too, because my dad wanted it.
Uh-huh.
So I had these two boys over at my house, and I like kind of suspected. I was like, well, I'll do just about anything to get like friends to come over. Like,
yeah,
they heard I had a Nintendo and a refrigerator full of sodas.
Of course.
So they would come over. I very quickly got the sense that,
oh no, they were there for just that.
They were there for the prizes.
Oh no.
So that didn't last very
long. I'm assuming it was all Pepsi sodas from the Pepsi family.
It was. I don't know what my dad did. I think he bought some Jolt. And I don't know what company that was from.
Jolt? Yeah, I don't know what Jolt is either.
Who makes Jolt?
Who does make Jolt?
So for some reason, temporarily we had some Jolt. And the boys drank all the Jolt. And I was like, oh, well, don't drink. Okay.
As you're just feeding them sugar and caffeine. I mean, it was called Jolt.
Jolt.
And I think Jolt, some version of Jolt still exists. Okay. It's interesting too, because I feel like when I think about Coke products, they're less known for being highly caffeinated, but both Mountain Dew and I don't know who makes Jolt, but Mountain Dew was another one that was like, listen, if you want to get real cracked out on caffeine, Mountain Dew is the way to go.
I know that's oh God, I don't remember the last time I had a Mountain Dew. I mean,
I don't either. I don't remember ever thinking it was that good.
It wasn't good. I mean, yeah. Personally, not my
jam. I'm not sure what it was supposed
jam.
To taste like either. Is it supposed to be lemony? It's supposed to taste like dew, Janet. Mountain Dew.
Like
dew from
the fresh
mountains.
Dew. No, I feel like it is their intention to make it taste like chemicals.
And they succeeded. It seems like what I'm remembering of the taste almost seems like you would rather chew on the can it came in than drink it, in terms of like the metallic, like that's nasty stuff.
I think I had a friend once who drank so much Mountain Dew in college that his waste product had turned green.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
It was like it is kind of, and it's also, I mean, it is, yeah, it tastes like nuclear waste. It looks like nuclear waste. For those of you who are Mountain Dew fans out there, I really apologize, but.
They will never endorse your podcast.
Oh my God. I thought I was, you know what? I came so close. I came so close, and then at the last minute they pulled it. They pulled the sponsorship after I said that it was like nuclear waste. Oh, God. Do the do, because it will turn you into a mutant. You will be able to perform better at most sports when you drink Mountain Dew, right? Because they sort of endorse, they're like big on like your mountain bike, like Mountain Dew mountain bike. It's like, this is what athletes drink before they have heart attacks.
Athletes in the wild.
When you observe athletes in their natural habitat.
Is there a song to that?
Do it, Mountain Dew. That's all I remember. Oh, I think that's enough.
Plenty.
I've just endorsed Mountain Dew. But not the opposite. I've now sponsored Mountain Dew. Like all of this shit talking I'm doing about Mountain Dew, I guarantee you one listener is like, I gotta go get some Mountain Dew. I miss that stuff.
Just have one.
Just one.
If everyone who listens just has one.
Now we're fundraising for Mountain Dew. If each person out there, if each good Samaritan out there just partakes of one Mountain Dew, guys, our work here will be done. Ay, yay, yay. That is grim.
I wonder how old PepsiCo's doing.
I know. I do, too. Well, it was always like the
people
back...
are drinking soda anymore. Are people drinking soda?
I think they still are. I feel like primarily people are drinking Diet Coke. Like, that's everyone I know orders Diet Coke. If they order a soda at all, they order a Diet Coke. But it happens a lot.
Ooh. I think I may have had a year of Diet Coke.
Yeah.
The year before I stopped drinking soda altogether.
Yeah. You're very conscientious and you're very health conscious. And we were just talking before we started the podcast that Jessica's been, she's reminding me that I need to get on top of like finding out what chemicals are in my cosmetics and stuff. It's just such a hard,
oh my God,
depressing road.
It's because it's overwhelming. There's not like a single site where you can go to look at comparatively. And
right,
studies done about what's good for you and good for you in what sense. It's really confusing. Yeah. Like, then some of the organic brands of products or cosmetics, they're not exactly up to date on all the colors that, like, say,
right,
you know, the MAC counter.
Yeah.
So you're left with what feels like your aunt's selection of colors.
Totally your own selection of colors. And then like add on top of that, that all of our skin types are different. And just because this thing is organic and doesn't have anything bad in it, doesn't mean that it's not going to make your face totally break out. Like, you just don't know what's going to happen. And then you're outputting all this cash on product by product. It's like, oh, am I supposed to use this thing for 6 months until like my face gets used to it? Or was my face never meant? Or do I have an allergy to this thing that is technically not bad, but still is bad for me? And
my head swims.
Your head should swim.
But I was looking at the, I think it's thegoodguide.com.
Thegoodguide.com?
The Good Guide.
Oh, The Good Guide. It'd be weird if it was The Good Guide.
That'd be different.
That'd be weird.
That's a very sexy site, The Good Guide. The Good Guide. They've got a pretty comprehensive list of most major brands, organic and not, about how they're good for you, good for the environment, and then good for society.
Okay.
Different ratings.
Yeah.
All that. So bravo.
How disappointing to find out that like a company that uses really great ingredients for your skin is also like totally destroying the environment with like, you know, landfills or.
It feels like they have to, like, do they have to choose? Otherwise, the product would just be astronomically priced.
Yeah, that's a true point.
But like one that's really good for you, I looked, and I won't say which one, but. One of the really organic brands was actually had a super low rating as far as environment.
Yeah.
And I was like, how does that? This seems like the conscientiousness would go hand in hand. So that's why I'm proposing to you today that we launch our own brand.
I knew that was coming, and I thought that did sound good. It sounded like, a lot of work. It sounded like
anything. Hey, Janet, would you like to have six careers instead of the five you currently have?
I'd love to have another thing. And if you're very lucky, the different things that you get involved with all matter to you. So then it's even harder because then you're sort of worried about the things you're not tending to. If you're tending to something that, you know, one thing that does demand attention at any given time.
That and the sportswear.
And that's why I would like to propose to you that our seventh career is cloning.
Oh, God.
How bad can that be for the environment?
No.
What's the worst thing we could be doing to the environment, the society, or anybody else if we just cloned ourselves? I'm starting just you and me.
Just us.
To do those other things. What's the worst that could happen?
Well, you steal your own boyfriend.
Everyone knows. Everyone knows that's the worst outcome. You're right. You're absolutely right. And when I think about it, that's extremely painful. I don't know if I can do that.
You would lose all sense of sense of self or individuality. Would the clone have the same memories and the same desires, the same...
I don't know.
...taste as you have?
I guess it depends on whether we're talking about cloning a baby that grows quickly, or if you're cloning, like, you're just popping into a cloning machine and then, like, two of you come out. Like in that one magic movie. Which one's that?
The Last Mimsy.
Yes, The Last Mimsy. God, I think maybe I haven't heard the name of that since it was at the theater. Oh, my God. No, it's that one. This is one of the listeners' least favorite things is when I blank on something and they're listening to it after the fact. You guys all take a deep breath. You do not have to weigh in on the Nerdist page and tell me what I'm trying to think of, because I promise you in just moments I'll remember what it is. But I'm talking about is it the Hugh Jackman one? You know, there were two movies
You're
that came back.
The wrong
they came
sister.
Out at the same time. Mm-hmm. One was the
Unicorn Diaries.
The Unicorn Diaries Part 8. Oh, they're always making another Unicorn Diaries. The Prestige. The Prestige.
Oh, God.
That's what I'm thinking of.
Okay, well.
The Prestige involves see, guys, I told you, you don't have to worry and you don't have to weigh in. I already figured it out. The Prestige involves, you know, that like a magic trick that actually clones. Did you see that movie? You
no.
didn't see it? It's really good.
Wait, I did.
Right?
He's got a big machine.
Yeah. It's like on a hilltop and it keeps spitting out versions of him that have to be killed. As soon as they come out, it's like, in order to have this amazing, magical, truly magic / science trick, this illusion, you are essentially cloning yourself, then you have to kill the clones. Otherwise, there's just a bunch of you running around stealing your boyfriend.
From each other.
The side effect of magic. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But it did sort of raise that interesting question. I mean, what do you think about cloning? Oh. Not to say that you have to have an opinion right now.
I mean, it makes me panic. I feel sick about it. I have very strong feelings against
it. Oh, yeah. So, like, the idea of, like, when, do you remember where, like, when they cloned the sheep, you know, however long ago that was, like 20 years ago? Were you like, uh-oh,
Yeah, you're like, what
Dolly?
Is the repercussion of that? And then,
yeah.
Human cloning, I don't know. That just, it feels like, I'm already behind in technology. You're going to do that to me. I become a grandma instantly without ever having had children first. I just instantly, like, in my day, we rode bikes down the street by ourselves.
I know that I talk about that on the podcast a lot, is that I feel like I can't remember exactly when it turned from me feeling like, and I even use this with like references and stuff, from me being the person who was like, I don't know who you're talking about, to me being like, you've never heard of, like, somehow that switched for me in a lot of my day-to-day interactions. Used to be, I just never would make a reference that someone younger than me didn't get, or I was always around people older than me.
Oh, okay.
And so I felt like I was constantly like around people who were older than me, who would say, you know, it's like that Vincent Price movie, da da da, and I'd be like, I don't know what that is. And they would go, you don't know what blah 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 is. And now I feel like I'm old enough that I have more younger people around me, and I'll say something like, well, I don't know, I mean, we're not talking about like the Gin Blossoms here or something like that. Oh. And someone will go, I have no idea what that is. And I'll go, you don't know who the Gin Blossoms are.
Arizona so, band. Arizona
yeah,
band.
It is. I pulled that out the last minute trying to think of something Arizona related.
Thank God.
But Yeah, and I was able to try on some Google glasses recently because do you know what they are?
I don't know what
they are.
Yeah,
they're like it's basically like Google glasses can do a bunch of different things, a la kind of Siri on an iPhone, where you can sort of give a command and it'll do it with voice recognition technology. But also, you are wearing a pair of kind of funky looking pseudo glasses that also have a tiny screen in the corner. And so you can like browse the web while you're just like walking around.
Oh no.
And what I noticed, they were getting passed around this party that I was at in like a demo mode. And what I realized,
I picture some eccentric, very like well-to-do part where everyone's like, well, I just got these glasses and they're,
I gotta be honest with you, that's exactly what it was. Okay. It was Neil Harris's birthday. It was like a small dinner party at like a schmancy Sunset Strip hotel in their dining room. And Neil was given a pair of glasses to use to, because he's the kind of person that people are like, take this thing and tell us what you think or whatever. Be one of the first ones. And so he was like, he passed it around. And what I realized in watching other people interacting with it, because the whole thing is like, oh, you can be wearing these and you can be like checking your stocks, but you can also be like looking at a person because you're seeing.
It's so rude.
But this is what it looks like. I don't know if I can adequately describe this just with audio, but I'm going to try. It looks like if you're talking to someone and they're also getting information from Google, so they're actually looking at the tiny screen that you can't see. Mm-hmm. They look like they are like Christopher Walken in the movie The Dead Zone when he touches someone and he suddenly has a premonition of a flash and he's not really looking at anything because he's looking into the future. That is what it looks like. It looks like people are like, did you know that jellyfish can swim 100 miles an hour? And it's like they're being hit with like some sort of inner sight thing that they're seeing.
They're like looking off
like
a bit.
Like a blind person with psychic powers.
Like they're not quite looking at your face.
Yeah. But they're not looking beyond you because the screen is here, but they're also not cross-eyed. So it's really, it's like such this. A specific expression.
Am I doing
yes.
it?
You're just not, yeah, you're like not focused on anything, but you're still looking out almost like, or like a dead body on a TV show. Like somebody who has to just like glaze their eyes over because they're dead now on a TV show.
Have you ever been dead on a TV show?
No, but you have, huh? You got stuffed in a trunk. Oh, that's fantastic. I sort of still wish that I would. And as an actor, if a show isn't compelling enough to sort of maintain the suspension of disbelief, I do become very preoccupied with like how well that person is doing at playing dead. Do you?
I do. I always look like I'm constantly looking like, breathe. I dare you breathe.
Blink. Are your eyes watering?
Like how they do that? That's forever. Yeah. They did that forever.
Would you, when you were dead, you were dead and you did have your eyes open, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about that experience. Well, I know it was for CSI
I was
New York.
In a trunk with the actor, his first name is Kyle, and God bless him, I can't remember his last name right
now. It's all right, we're going to get through this.
Very Scotty, no. Sweet character. He had to be tied up. This is the thing. He was tied up in the trunk, and then the dead body, gets dumped in on top. I mean, I was alive on the show before I died. I don't.
Oh my God, you're a clone. The real Jessica died that day.
No, I mean like the character too, like I was alive, and then I was dead, and then I got put in the trunk. So he's supposed to be.
Oh yeah, you were like an extra who only played a dead body. Let's be very clear on that point.
So don't come calling just to have me be dumped. He had to be crying in the trunk tied up with, you know, masking tape and because the dead body gets dumped in the trunk with him. So the makeup woman is putting the, you know, the menthol on his eyelashes so that it's easy for, you know, so he has the, I hate to ruin the Hollywood magic, but
sometimes people can't cry or won't cry or don't need to cry for reals.
It's you got to get it now, and no one really cares if it's real.
Yeah.
So they put the menthol on his eyelashes to make him cry. Well, I'm in there with him because we're trying to get the.
And is it a real trunk that they've hollowed out? Like, how is it?
It's a real trunk of a real car that they've hollowed out so that the backside, like the where the back seats would be, is sort of more open than it would be. But the trunk is actual size.
Yeah.
And this was in a cab, the back of a cab. Yeah. So the trunk is open and the makeup woman is brushing his eyes, and she dips it, the brush back in the menthol to go back to his other eye, and jabs me directly in my eye with the brush.
No!
Not on my eyelashes, no! On my eyeball.
Oh, no,
it was
no,
excruciating.
No. Oh,
with,
no.
Like, they had, like, they were flushing water.
Oh,
and,
no.
And we had to go really very quickly. But the thing was, I had to keep my eyes open.
That's the worst thing you could have to do under those circumstances.
Yes.
It created the most nightmare of circumstances,
yes,
for you.
Oh, that sucks.
So, and so, also, so he had to remain tied up while we flushed my eye because we couldn't keep getting out of the trunk. It was like this terrible situation for all involved.
Yeah.
But I think it turned out okay.
And the makeup person must have been mortified.
I'm sure she felt bad.
Mortified.
I'm sure she felt bad. She was very nice.
I want to be clear. I did
I'm not
angry.
Have her fired. I've let it go.
You did not have
it's just
fired.
A fun
Were
story.
You nervous about being able to keep your eyes open for that long? Or did it turn out that you didn't? I mean, with all of that said, before that even happened, were you like, oh, yeah, 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 I hope I can.
No, I always get really excited by things like that. Anything that has to do with, it's going to sound awful, like a challenge about,
yeah,
like duration or like you have to do.
That doesn't sound awful. I think that's super cool.
I always love those kinds of challenges, like when it matters.
Yeah,
when you're shooting and you have to get something and you know time is of the, you just have to get it. I love that challenge.
You know what's interesting about that too is that, and I hate to, and I don't mean to like overly out you on this, so you can tell me if I'm wrong, but I think that you and I both work better under deadlines in general. So it's interesting because it's almost like it's the maximum version of that is these moments when like there's a short period of time, we've got to get the shot, you've got to do it, it's going to be hard but you've got to do it, that's not so dissimilar from like, please don't tell me I have 3 weeks to write a term paper, you might as well just give me the assignment the night before.
Exactly.
You might as well, I'm not gonna do a better job like if you give me more time. I'm not that person.
I was never that person.
But some people are, and I think I always thought no one is, because we all kind of, procrastinators like to laugh and joke about how they procrastinate, but some people are a bit slow and steady wins the race about stuff.
I don't know. Did their parents teach them how to be that?
I don't
way?
Know. That's my question, is like, where does that kind of methodology come from? Because it seems like most children are impatient. And then the question is like, is it genetics that keeps you impatient as you get older? Is it upbringing? Is it both? Is it, do you just mellow out into a more patient person because your DNA is going to inform that that's probably going to happen? Like, I don't know where certain characteristics, I mean, obviously this is like an age old question, but it's interesting to think about.
The heaviest part of the question to me feels like the term paper issue about, like, there was no worse feeling than having to go 2 days before the paper's due to the public library.
Yeah.
To get the reference
and
materials.
And hope that there's some...
There's something that they haven't all been checked out.
This is a total in our day moment, too, because you did have to go to the library.
You had to go to the
and
library.
There are a limited amount of resources.
And you had to go into the card catalog, which, yeah, was actual cards.
Yeah.
Later, there was computers.
I guess there were. But
early
even
on,
like
you
in,
had to
being
look
in college,
like
we didn't have I didn't have like access to the internet the way that everyone after me did. Mm-hmm. We're like the last generation of people who didn't have that. We're the kind of defining generation of like everybody after us had a completely different educational experience, and everyone before us had a similar one. For several generations
we
ahead.
Are the last Mimsy.
We're the last Mimsy.
Aww.
I can't remember what the last Mimsy's about.
It's a
if I ever
movie
knew.
About some scary puppets.
It is?
I think so. A
is
doll?
It a kid's movie?
It's a scary doll. No, there's a kid in it.
The but last
it's,
Mimsy.
It's
you're
a
telling me the
film.
Something called The Last Mimsy,
yes,
which sounds like it should be like The Hobbit. Is actually a scary horror movie.
I think so. Or maybe I just found it.
You know why? Because we don't have to go to the library to find this out.
I just found it horrifying. Perhaps that's the
last
Mimsy. Stop it. When did we started joking about the last Mimsy on a tear? You and I kept going in the movies together and last Mimsy preview came
it's
up.
It's a kid's movie.
No, it isn't.
Yes, it is.
It's not about scary dolls coming back to life.
Look at those two. Look at those two critters.
Oh.
There's just like two kids standing in the
those critters
in
yeah.
the perfect bad sitcom slash bad movie pose of like standing back to back facing the camera.
Looking up. With magic behind them.
Yeah. With a lot of magic behind them.
Mimsy, there is a like a Velveteen Rabbit involved.
Okay.
I don't know when we would have seen that preview.
2007.
We went to see Seven, the movie Seven, together, and we bawled our eyes out.
Wait, Seven?
No.
Because I saw that when I was in college, and I was like, I'll never see that movie
ever. I'm sorry,
ever
dear.
Again.
I meant 7 pounds.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no. Because I know for sure I had barely slept the night before. I remember being...
Don't give
me something. No, first of all, I can't give myself an excuse because I would have cried anyway. But you know that like emotional rawness that you have? And I think you did too. I feel like maybe we were together the night before. Because I remember being like that kind of awake where you're like crazy awake because you didn't get enough sleep.
I don't know. What year was that?
It was devastating, 2007.
It was a devastating
movie. But even after we were devastated by it and we were crying, I do want to say that we were like, we really just got like duped by this movie and we're crying and we know it wasn't that good. I want to reassure you that the plot of The Last Mimsy is presented as a memory flashback by a woman named Lena. The Last Mimsy is the story of a distant future's attempt to avert a catastrophic ecological disaster that has destroyed their world.
But for kids.
High-tech devices. You're right, though. Look, high-tech devices masquerading as toys are sent back in time into the hands of Noah and Emma, two children who live with their parents in 21st century Seattle. The toys are incomprehensible, except what appears to be a stuffed rabbit named Mimsy. Sensing the strangeness of the devices, the children initially keep their discovery a secret from their parents. What's interesting about this is how accidentally so much of this has to do with what we've, like, different subjects coming together that we've talked about already on this episode of the podcast. I think that's kind of weird. Only short of it being, like, led by clones of the children. The puppets, blah, blah, blah. Also, they're not puppets. Okay, I want to get back into Arizona teenagerhood for a second because we haven't really talked about your adolescence in Arizona. So you went to high school in Tempe. What was your high school experience like? How was it?
By the time I'd gotten into high school, I found so much relief in the freedom of school.
Okay. Because that's right around the time that your parents were splitting up.
Yeah, the first and second year. Oh, it's just kind of a strange time at home, my high school years in general. Like, you know, things weren't going so hot. And then my parents sort of announced the divorce. And then we all stayed together after that decision for, I think, a year. Oof. While we waited for another house development. Because we had decided to buy a house that wasn't yet built that my mom and I were supposed to move into. And like, I think the company went out of business halfway through. So it was like, well, who's going to build this house? It's halfway done. What do we do now?
No.
So we had to wait. This was this very weird time of like waiting or nothingness. But I was into lots of stuff. Like theater was my lifeline of like, you can do this. You can spend your time. You can spend your time doing this.
Yeah.
And I will spend as much time as humanly possible doing exactly this.
Yeah. Did you have
that carried into college and stuff for me?
Was your theater? I mean, like I've said this before on the podcast, but all due respect to my high school teacher, my theater teacher, frankly, who doesn't deserve very much respect. I guess my point is, high school drama isn't necessarily like the same as majoring in theater. Sometimes it's a place where it's a collective of people who don't really want to do anything else that. Period. So I feel like I was in a group full of kids who, like, 50% of them were genuinely interested in theater, and the other 50% were like, this beats being in a regular class, or like, this is a good elective because it requires almost nothing of me, because the reputation at my high school was sort of that, like, you could kind of just dick around, frankly, for a lot of the class. So I'm wondering if you feel like you instilled like if you kind of infused your experience internally, or if you really felt like you got a lot of inspiration from your classmates and the shows that you guys were doing and stuff. Does that make sense?
I got a lot of influence and excitement from the kids who are older than me, the other people that I thought were really fantastic. And you sort of aspired to being as seasoned as they were 2 years older than you were, like, oh, that's going to be me.
Yeah.
And getting to work hard and allowing that to happen. I think the theater programs, they still have theater in schools?
Oh my God, I don't even know.
Can they afford that?
Let's see. No languages, no music, no art, probably no theater.
I feel like the theater department collected people who may have went on later. Maybe they weren't actors necessarily, but were like costume, you know, people who were went into fashion or costuming or were interested in that, or writing, people who write for
that's really cool. Anything.
It sort of draws all sorts of people who don't who don't fit into, like, you know.
So, because you're absolutely right. There are, I mean, I noticed that a lot in college, is that that's a great catch-all. We've talked about it on the podcast before, that theater is a great catch-all for misfits of all shapes and sizes in general, because there's usually something that you can find to get involved with in theater, whether it's the tech side, whether it's writing, whether it's costumes, that that can sort of satisfy any person who feels like maybe they don't fit in somewhere else. But it's true. It's a really great, like, that's how I discovered I wanted to get involved in interior design, was having to take the, like, you know, the stage design class, where, you know, we had to learn how to do, like, what am I trying to say? Like to be able to know, like drawing dimensions and drawing, like, scale, you know, scene design. Yeah. Stuff like that, where I was like, oh, this is so fun. Now I sort of know what the math rules are to, like, drawing what a room would look like.
You learned that in high school?
No, in college.
Oh, okay.
In high school, I didn't learn really anything. It was, like, just a bunch of jerks hanging around, like, kissing in the darkness of the dressing room during theater, unless we were, like, rehearsing to put on a play. The rest of the time, it was just kind of, like, I can't say that I was, like, fulfilled theatrically. Unless we were in the middle of doing a play. What were some of the plays that you did?
Oh, God.
A lot of mine don't have, like, no one has ever heard of them, because they're all, like, whatever was cheapest to get.
A lot of Neil Simon.
Oh, okay. Nice. See, I never did any.
Steel Magnolias, Marvin's Room.
Oh, yeah. You did it all.
Good plays.
Guys, all of these are available as films as well. I'm sure not as good as the plays, but maybe.
A Few Good Men was also.
Did you? Yeah. A Few Good Men. Mm-hmm. God, you guys did good shows.
We did good shows. The Crucible.
You really did. You did what people are supposed to be doing. I can't say that I did.
What people are supposed to.
I don't even know what that means. Did you guys ever do musicals?
There were musicals. I was, like, in this weird middle. I was, like, a junior when we did Into the Woods, I think. And I was sort of, like, junior to a couple of really great senior actresses who could sing. And then, like, there was also, like, the infusion of the choir people that auditioned, who, like, got it. So it's like, to my chagrin, I was not. That was the one I was like, you're kidding.
Yeah. I'm not going to even. It's funny because these guys know who've listened to the podcast before. I can't remember what episode I was talking about, but I had a similar experience with Into the Woods, so I won't retell that story. But very funny to me that we both have the sort of, like, but with that particular musical. That's really funny.
That's funny. We've never talked about that
before. I know.
Before.
I'll tell you the story offline because these guys already know it.
Okay. But I felt really fulfilled by all of that. Any kind of challenge for any sort of character. It didn't matter if it was, I don't know, it was old ladies or whatever it is. Like, I just to dive into creating anything, it was like heaven. It was just like a balm to whatever I had going on. Work I understood.
And was it that feeling of, like, when I'm doing this, everything else sort of goes away? And do you still feel that way about, like, doing improv and stuff?
I don't know if I've ever equated that. I mean, you have to be so present and be paying so much attention and listening within improv
Guys, I want to quickly say that if I haven't acknowledged this before on the podcast, Jessica is one of my favorite all-time improvisers, oh. and we do perform in a group together. She performs very regularly at the Iowa West here in Los Angeles. She performs weekly with their kind of famed Armando group, and I am extremely lazy, and I only do improv when it gets me to a festival, either my own or someone else's. But Jessica is just one of those people who really embraces the kind of like, be truthful and really be present in the moment and don't just go for the laughs. And I think that is still lacking in a lot of improv. And I think that a lot of improv that people are really drawn to involves that kind of truth telling and that there's like these opportunities. Nice. Like I'll see something come to life in her when we're doing shows that is like reminiscent of a conversation maybe that was had earlier in the day. Not to say that it's like, that doesn't mean that you're like, you're not improvising. It's not that, but it's like, you don't know where your inspiration is going to come from. And this grain of something will come out. And it's like this sort of beautiful, heartbreaking truth that gets converted into something funny. And that's what I think. That's actually why I love this podcast, because I feel like the comedy comes out of like people just being honest and like being goofy and making fun of themselves instead of like, all right, this is a comedy podcast. That's a comedy improv show. Mm-hmm. Let's be funny. Go. Like, where is that going to come from? From nothing. Make it from nothing. It doesn't work.
Under pressure. It doesn't work. I think if you're not allowed the space to explore what actual emotions surrounding a scene or an initiation with an improv, if you're not allowed that room, I can't function.
Yeah.
Those are the moments that I find so mostly rewarding about improv that you and I end up getting into a lot. There's always like my favorite scenes are always the most sort of, there's a precious quality.
Yeah.
About
a vulnerability.
It. Yeah.
Think.
When someone, you can tell people have real feelings about anything. It's always so much more interesting to watch than just, you know, people just being smart.
I agree. I feel the same way. I think I love the idea of, especially with an improv show where these characters come and go so quickly, but if they're truthful and if there's like a vulnerability to them, you're invested in their story, even if the story only lasts 2 minutes. Somehow, if the improvisers are doing their job, you're invested in their story and you feel when someone's cruel to them or whatever, you're like, oh no. And you're sort of laughing at that cruelty, but you're also like, oh my God, this is suddenly a recognizable real person and they're gone. But just for that little window of time, you actually cared about what was happening.
That's one of my favorite sounds, I guess. And we get to hear it a lot. I guess the theme park shows are full of those moments when you hear people going like, no.
It's true.
Amidst laughter, there's always that like entreating people for their empathy.
Yeah, know? That's a really good point. I think we do bring that. We do bring that in a lot. Because like I don't see that as much with, and I think ASCAT shows are brilliant, but I don't see as many like sweet characters in ASCAT shows. I see a lot of like people like being very bold and dangerous and crazy and great in other ways, but I don't see as much of a situation where you're like, oh, that character that Matt Besser's playing, I'm really sympathizing with right now. I think you're laughing a mile a minute. It's just different.
They're very smart players. I think if they had more women playing with them, they might have more of that.
Yeah, that's a good point.
That's my general opinion about that. I think when you exclude, I mean, groups are what they are. If a group happens to just be all men, that's their group. But yeah. I think it's a general, really terrible trend that, or just fact about who's drawn to improv and comedy is that it's largely male, that it's largely white, that it's largely straight.
Yeah.
That there's a huge group of people that are excluded, and that I think so many shows and groups would be so much better off having those people included, because you're missing that perspective of life.
Oh, that's such a good point.
You're missing all the colors of what those people have to bring different types of suffering, different types of enjoyment and joy.
And let me come forward and say, I think you're speaking in larger terms without necessarily planning to, too, which is like, you've just made the argument for why nobody should go to a school that's like segregated because of affluence or some other cultural reason that ends up also being that it denies a certain level of, you know, whether it's a level of how much money comes into a family, whether, you know, whether it's that or whether it's like a bad neighborhood or whether whatever the reason is, that's like when I start getting up on my sort of liberal high horse about how lucky I feel to have gone to a magnet school and being from a state like Arizona that's so ethnically diverse, that it's kind of exactly what you just said. Like if you're watching this sort of performance of life, how much richer is it if you really get a chance to experience firsthand what everybody else that doesn't look like you or sound like you or feel like you is experiencing?
That was definitely true in Arizona in grade school. There was a lot of Native American kids and Hispanic kids at my school. I would say it was at least 50-50.
Was that different when you were in high school?
High school was mainly white kids. I mean, yeah. There was a handful of black kids and
yeah.
Certainly way less suspicious. Like all of a sudden those people were
at another
gone.
School.
Yeah. Like
wait, so what is
zoned
so,
differently. And yeah. it was a very Mormon high school.
Oh yeah. So Jessica's not Mormon, but she grew up around a lot of Mormons. And of course you guys know I had to go to Mormon church too. So we have that. You probably weren't exposed to it as much or more in some ways than I was. Cause I didn't have Mormon friends at school. Oh. All my friends at school, I don't think, by the time I was in high school, I'm trying to think of a single person I went to high school with other than my friend who I've talked about on the podcast before, who was like equally as rebellious and, you know, a terrible Mormon as was I. But it was like completely separate. It was like, I didn't see anyone from my ward, from church. None of those people went to my school because my mom, I went to school near where my dad lived because he had primary custody, but my mom went to a ward near where she lived. So all of those kids were going to high school together off at another school. Uh-huh. And I was at my school and
well, maybe you would have
so I never had,
school.
Yeah, I never talked to, I never had like, never the twain shall meet. It was like my life in high school never had anything to do with Mormonism. It was just Sundays at church that I had to like show up and they would be like, are you in seminary at your school? And I'd be like, no.
Do they have, they don't have that in my, do they have
oh, they
that
didn't?
They, no, but, no, they had oh, that at my, yeah. They had that. I went to a huge high school. It was like 4,000 kids or something
oh,
crazy.
Oh my God.
Am I exaggerating? Was
I don't
it 2,000? Either way, that's a lot.
I don't know. Yeah, that's huge. Ours was not very big. I've said on the podcast before, like, I don't know how big my school was. I've since talked to someone who was like, we did not have a very big, it might have even been Tina on the podcast because I podcasted someone I went to school with, but that like, it's been confirmed that my school was not that big. Like, okay. Okay. So my school, because I was like, it didn't seem like it was that big. It was not that big.
I had a good friend through high school. One of my best girlfriends was, her family was Mormon or Jack Mormon, or is that,
yeah.
Is that
so they were
inappropriate
like not really
term?
Practicing, yeah.
Yeah, not really practicing, or they had decided to leave or whatever, but they had like, you know, 5 kids. And so my friend was somewhere in the middle and you definitely saw the like rubber band effect from like someone who's brought up that way and then all of a sudden decides that it's not for them and then they kind of
yeah
where people go from
yeah
from
yeah,
there
yeah.
In terms of rebellion
yeah I can't believe this but we're already at 50 minutes and I want to get into playing a game of MASH and I also oh. Before we do that I have been as you guys know asking for and receiving some questions from listeners about various things. It's part of the junior varsity advice section.
Exciting.
So I am going to pull out this question.
Oh.
I'm not going to name the listener because she will know who she is. But I'm going to go ahead and read this and then we would love to, we're going to talk about it a little bit and
cool.
See if we can come up with some advice. I recently graduated and I've been interviewing and will soon be working in the tech industry, which is typically a very male dominated field. Ah. I've always had a lot of trouble being assertive. And in school, I notice a lot of guys take that to mean they can pretty much walk all over me and dismiss my input into team projects. You've mentioned that you have a problem with qualifying everything you say, and I can completely relate to that. I am often told to just get to the point already because I take too long to explain something. Oh, my dear. Yes, you are a kindred spirit with that, with me in that. I'm wondering how to be more assertive and confident in sharing my ideas and opinions because I'm afraid I'll be passed over for things in the workplace by not being more direct. I'm particularly worried about being in such a male-dominated field and being looked at as unsure of myself or in over my head. I've had situations while in college of having my solutions overlooked by the rest of the group while working on programs together, and it's incredibly frustrating. Somewhat related to this is often when I'm angry or frustrated, I'll start crying. Not because I'm sad, but just as a physical reaction, and it makes it so much worse. Men seem to just write me off as being hysterical when I'm really trying to forcefully argue my position. It's like an automatic reaction. Oh, she's crying. She's not being rational anymore. I win the argument. I hope this question doesn't seem overly negative toward men. I think a lot of men who do this don't even realize that they are, and it's not because they're horrible people, but unfortunately by their unconscious reaction. See, I even had to qualify this question with that statement. This is why I love my listeners. I just have such thoughtful, wonderful, sensitive listeners. Nobody wants to offend anybody. I think it's funny because I wasn't sure which question I was going to pick, and I just picked the one off the top, and it ended up being so pertinent to the fact that we just talked about this world that we sort of came into that is also very male dominated, and that it perpetuates the cycle of like, you only see guys do it, so only guys do it. You only see guys, you know? And I think that strangely, there's a real parallel there with what this listener is talking about. Let's call her Missy, that Missy's talking about with what she's facing in her day to day. So Jessica, what do you think about that? Just general thoughts on the subject. How do you, command respect without being false to yourself, without trying to put on or be more male, you know? How do you assert yourself as a woman in a male-dominated field without feeling that you have to adopt male characteristics to get by? Because then that's what happens to a lot of women.
That's a thing that's taken a long time of messing up. Like, I guess not messing up, but like, trying something out or like getting frustrated and then getting into a situation where you feel like, oh my gosh, I overreacted to that because I had feelings about it. I think just admitting that you have a feeling about something, or to say my sense is when you mean you have feelings about something, mm-hmm. if it feels like an inappropriate time to mention that you have a feeling.
Because God forbid you have emotions.
Yes. Yeah. But, you know.
My senses is great.
My sense is that I'm not interested in that.
Right.
I can't be sure. Let me get back to you on that. There's like certain like go-to things like that are strong statements without committing
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
or turning something down mm-hmm. That I have learned that are really helpful. Is communicating even when you don't know the answer.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to get back to you on that.
Yeah.
Type of statements with people, or to say, I'm having a feeling about that. You're going to have to give me a minute to respond.
Yeah. Oh God. Asking to like demanding that other people have patience with your process, because someone's timeline is like, hey, we're doing this right now. Like that you're not entitled to do anything but follow along their game plan is so true. It's such a great point.
It's easy to feel rushed with people who are, maybe you're in a first time situation. If it's in a group, whether it's men or women you're in a first time situation with people who do this all the time, it's easy to feel intimidated and not to say what it is you mean, or to say that you feel strongly about something,
yeah.
to volunteer yourself and say, I'd like to do that. And that I feel pretty yeah. strongly about that.
Yeah. I love what you just said. And you know what that just brought up for me was this idea, as I'm imagining our sweet Missy, in this field that she's talking about. And this idea of like guys being dismissive of her is, I can't say that you're not feeling this way already, because I'm not inside your head, and it's not exactly phrased in this question. But what I will say is you deserve to be there. And I think that we as women are often conditioned, and that's one of the reasons why I qualify stuff sometimes, especially in certain environments, is that what I'm doing is apologizing for my presence in some sort of a very deep, intense mm-hmm. subconscious way, is that I'm saying, I'm sorry that I'm making my voice heard, but I think I might be right about this. And instead, I think that if you sit with the reality in your gut, Missy, that you deserve to be there, that then some of those qualifications are going to fall away. And you won't, maybe you won't feel the same kind of frustration, because maybe that there will be a calm to that instead of a crackly energy of fear and anxiety, or what are they going to think of me? That it's about breathing and taking the moment to just be in your space and go internally, well, I certainly deserve to be here, and I'm really sure that I'm right. And that's coming from such a place of power that's authentic. It's not like you're trying to seem more powerful than you feel.
If you, on a more consistent basis, if you make sure that you're speaking your mind on a more consistent basis and that you're feeling heard, it's not going to build up to that point.
Yeah, perhaps the build up where is such
you,
a good
where
point.
You explode and maybe you anger, tears, or whatever, that you can take the emotion out of it. If you're consistently on a daily basis making sure you let people you're working with know where you're at, and yeah, you're making your voice heard, then you don't have that build up, that resentment that comes out when things get tense.
Yeah.
And not only do you deserve to be there, but that you're offering something in a room full of men that not one of them has.
Yeah.
And that's a female perspective.
Yes.
Regardless of what field you're in.
And that you're pioneering. I mean, when those of us who are in scary situations, and this goes for my male listeners, my female listeners, listeners of all ages, when you feel like a fish out of water, chances are you are creating opportunities for people who come next. And that pioneering feeling is so scary, because it's hard to feel like you're supported in the moment. But if you almost can imagine a groundswell of support from people you don't even know yet, who may not even know yet how much they appreciate what you're doing, feel the weight of that behind you like a trust exercise, fall back into that. You can't see them there, but they're there. And you, in turn, are doing them a service by staying strong and being tough and being authentic and persevering, because that's what makes it possible for the next round of people to come through and go, well, I saw Missy in that tech-related field, and I didn't think it could be done, but she's totally kicking ass. So how exciting to create that opportunity for others.
Absolutely. And something I try to do when I talk to people at the theater or young women who talk to me after a show is say, you know, are you taking class here? Are you involved? Great. We need you.
Yeah.
Stay here. We need you.
Yeah.
And to encourage other women to stick around in male dominated fields, that they're important. And,
yeah.
And that they're supported, that they have a network, just the way the boys stick together. There's a, it's not so scary if the girls can
yeah,
help each other.
Oh my God. I love that. I'm so glad that you were the guest for that question. I think that was a very good Jessica specific kind of a question. I hope you're happy with the response. I cannot emphasize enough that person's not real name was Missy.
Dear Missy.
So definitely not Missy. I think what I'm going to do is go straight into the MASH game. Sometimes I use, unless, do you feel strongly about wanting to do this? This is one of those booty catchers. Now I feel like
if
maybe
you want
we should
to.
Do it. Let's do this, but we'll make it a quick answer.
Okay,
it'll be the
fast
challenge of a quick answer, because it's very hard for me. All right, I need to alert Victoria that I cannot find the new cootie catcher she sent, so she may have to do an even newer one for me. This is the old one. Honey, I'm so sorry. I don't know what I did with it. I had it the last time I podcasted in the very last episode I did. Now it's missing, so maybe the dog ate it. Pick a color.
I'm going against my instinct. I talked about pink grapefruit earlier, okay, so I have to pick the
pink. P-I-N-K. Pick a number.
7.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Jesus. One of them's kind of a backwards. I think it's backwards two or something. 1, 2. What are 3 differences, better or worse, from your teenage self? 3 differences, better or worse, from your teenage self. Could be totally physical, could be emotional, could be like, I have the same hair, but I do this differently.
That is three differences. That's an intense question. I'm going to try and make it quick. I guess.
I know that I couldn't have picked a worse one.
I wasn't terribly conscientious at the time. I was really messy. And yeah. I think maybe messy with words as well.
Messy bed, messy head.
Yeah. Kind of like too blunt at times. And I didn't know how to process what I was feeling at any time. So it would come out in strange ways. So
yeah, that's a good one.
But I remember feeling really free regardless, like that time. Like I remember having this like sense of play.
Well, that's
freedom.
Good. Cause that's like a double sided, like heads was you were too blunt, but the tails was you felt more free. So now we just need one more difference.
More difference. I went to see, I don't go to concerts anymore.
Yeah.
I went to see a bajillion concerts all the time. And like right up front, like you just, until your t-shirt's just soaked,
yeah.
You're just sweating over.
Yeah.
How many shows? Like,
I know sometimes some podcast episodes end up being really music heavy, and we talk about like shows that we went to and stuff. Well, while I get this mash, well, you know what? This is what I'll do. I'll incorporate that answer into the mash game. For the first MASH question, I will say, if you could revisit one concert from high school, three that you fondly remember, and you'll end up revisiting one, like going back in time and going back to that one.
I saw the Beastie Boys
awesome
no less than five times in a period of like
love it
3 years.
Love it.
And I would have trouble picking which.
Okay,
BC
so I'm just
wondering,
yeah. So I'll just say whichever BC Boys concert ends up being the one that you most had enjoyed.
I ditched first day of school, junior year and senior year of high school to go to Lollapalooza.
Love it. Lollapalooza. That's a good one because you just incorporated like a bunch of bands into one.
Yeah.
Now one more.
I saw the band James.
Oh, sure.
Which was and is still one of my very
favorite. On fire with passion and love.
Yeah.
Luckily, I still have a cold, so everyone can enjoy how nasal that was.
And I saw them at the tiniest little
which is
venue
the best.
And that I think I snuck out to see or something.
Yeah.
It was groovy. And then I had the t-shirt because really the album ones. Was laid. But I got the concert tee. It said "Get Laid" on the forest green, like size large men's.
Totally
on the sleeve, and I was told that it was inappropriate at school.
I had to
roll the sleeve up.
You had to roll it up 50s grease style.
That never happened
to me. So I rolled a pack of cigarettes up into it, and then I got in trouble for that. It was just a series of unfortunate events.
And I never recovered. Okay,
it cut to me getting sued by saying a series of unfortunate events by the author of a series of unfortunate events. What are three leisure activities that you don't have access to now, whether you ever did, but like three fun leisure activities that you wish were just easier for you to like do or get to? It could just be, I wish I had more time to like read my favorite magazines, or it could be, I wish I lived near a place where I could snorkel all the time, like anything like that.
I wish I lived near a lake.
Okay.
That was hotter than most California lakes get.
Hot lake.
There you go.
Hot lake. Got
it. I love to water ski and swim in lakes, and I did that all growing up. And every time I do it, I get this huge rush of like life energy. And
we got to get up to a lake because we've been talking about kayaking.
I'm gonna buy a boat.
Oh, it'd be so fun.
Where am I going to keep it? I'll keep it in my bedroom.
Rent a boat. We could go to Big Bear and rent a boat
right now.
Like a speedboat.
Right.
Let's
now.
Let's just do it. Oh my god. Okay. Hot lake. Number two.
That I wish I had more time for. Tap
class. Dance. Love it.
Tap dancing.
Love it.
Three that I love. Sewing. That's such a Susie Homemaker answer, but I love to make things.
I know, and the stuff you make is like, listen, nobody's benefited by you not sewing. People would only benefit more. The world would only benefit more.
I need an old-fashioned sewing room.
Yeah, no kidding. Okay, what about three careers? It doesn't matter if you know like that they wouldn't be as fun as you think they would be.
Yeah.
Just like three other careers that like the fantasy of whatever they are would be really fun for you to have as a second career. You don't give up what you're doing. You just have a second career of doing this.
A baker.
Love it.
Of cake.
Uh-huh. A cake baker.
Other stuff too.
A caker.
Cake is great. A caker.
Okay.
Like a musician, a singer.
Yeah, okay.
If I could
love it.
If I could play guitar, I might I'd like to write songs.
Singer songwriter. Yeah. Got it. A real Jewel type. Just kidding. Totally kidding.
I could do my best Jewel impersonation.
Okay, number three.
Number three. God, I feel like I've had this answer that's been different.
I would like for us both to own like a shop together of some kind.
Oh, for sure, like a storefront somewhere, yeah. Or like a clothier that probably
yeah
umbrellas a bunch of stuff.
Yeah, there'll be some like home goods and stuff like that in there too, for sure. All right, listen, I am going a little tradish with this. But I feel like it's okay if your answers are retro answers.
Okay.
But who are the three guys? I'm not talking about your husband.
Oh, no.
But just give me like three celebrity crushes from like when you were younger, even. If it was like you would, like if you were playing this game when you were like 12, who would be on your list?
Oh my God. Okay. This is what I have 12 answers, but not because I still.
Yeah. Everybody knows that. People have picked so many different like people from all over the timeline.
Why can't I remember? I'm blanking.
It's okay. Everyone gets aphasia also. Everyone. I guarantee it.
I don't want to admit to this. Okay, so these are old school. These are old school
yeah.
answers.
Yeah.
Matthew Broderick.
Okay. Love it.
Number one.
Love everything about it. Even though I think I was so practical even back then, I think I was like, I'm too tall for him. As if it was ever going to happen.
Oh, that didn't
occur to me. I feel like I tailored my crushes too methodically even back then.
He seemed so funny to me
yeah.
that didn't matter.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, that's a huge thing.
That was a big deal.
No, you're totally right.
Please,
I love it. Like he was too short for me, but Steve Martin, who was like 40 years older than me, was like just
that's
right.
A good one. Actually, that's a really yeah. good one. I just came up with an alternate, but Jason Bateman.
Oh number yeah, two. Please, Jason Bateman. These are both good. These are both really funny, cute, but not like drop dead, like impossibly gorgeous. They're just like attractive, really sweet. Guys that you feel like you would know, like they feel knowable somehow, these characters that they played,
right?
Yeah,
drop dead. Like,
no, me neither.
Come on.
What am I gonna do with that? What
are you gonna do?
Nothing.
Sit in a car.
Yeah. Exactly.
Oh my God, I had I changed my mind on the last at the last minute.
Scotty,
and
no,
I'm not allowed to put Scott the dog.
Love you, but no, please lie down. He's more anxious today because it's Jessica. It's very cute.
He wants to play. He yeah. thinks it's his turn.
Yeah.
And then I had a better one than this, but the thing that's coming to mind is what's that little actor from The Boy Who Could Fly?
Oh God, that movie. He is so cute. Talk about a vulnerability. Interesting on that because he is extremely vulnerable, right? I mean, he just had, because he wasn't he mute? Wasn't he like mute in The Boy Who Could Fly?
Oh, maybe he didn't talk.
The boy.
Oh, Anthony Michael Hall.
Oh,
that's
going to
be number three. Let me put that as number
yeah,
three.
Yeah, I got that. But I am going to shout out that The Boy Who Could Fly's name is.
I know what it is because I remember looking yeah, at the what's credits his name? Of the movie every time it would roll by. So
Jay Underwood. Is he still around?
I don't think so.
Anthony Michael Hall is a great one, and I will say this. Major shout out to him as a young actor. His performances as an actor in Weird Science mm-hmm. and 16 Candles are like better than any acting I'll ever do in my lifetime. He is so nuanced.
Such
I'm not even kidding.
Like,
he's so present. Yeah. No moment is wasted. If you guys, it's been a while since you've seen Weird Science because it's like a really absurd, weird movie. It's probably not been that long since you guys have seen 16 Candles because we all kind of revisit the John Hughes movies from time to time. Weird Science, while not of quality that's like necessarily exactly the same.
Don't say that.
Okay, I'm sorry. I shouldn't say that because it's a great movie. If you haven't seen it in a while, revisit it, certainly for Bill Paxton's performance.
Oh, God.
But for the love of God, watch that scene where Anthony Michael Hall is drunk in the bar.
At the Blues Club.
It's like one of the best things I've ever seen on film.
To get the opportunity to do so many great things.
Oh, he's so good. That's a great one. Thank you for bringing back that memory for me of Weird Science. Okay, next category for you will be If you could, this is extremely superficial sounding, but everyone's just gonna have to deal with it. If you could instantly transport yourself to a city purely for the shopping. Purely for the shopping. Now, that can mean that the shopping experience is part of, like, what makes it so great is that you're in this place that's beautiful or there's something about it that you really like.
Okay.
But the principal reason you're there is to shop. It sounds so, like...
Love it.
It sounds so... I'm not going to debate it. Legally Blonde, but...
Here we go.
That's just the reality.
Paris.
Yes. And Jessica and I were in Paris together and did shop together. We did. It was wonderful.
Stockholm.
Gotta go, gotta get there.
Which I was in recently and wish I could go back to explore more. Gotta and three, Manhattan.
Yeah, I know. Right?
I mean, honestly.
Yeah. Oh, so good. So good. Okay. This is my next category. My next category is going to be, if you could create a new ride at Disneyland, three off the top of your head, you're an improviser, doesn't matter if they're your long-term answers. Everyone knows this is the last minute, spur of the moment. Create three new rides for Disneyland. One of them will come true.
Iceberg Castle.
Ooh, I love that. Like, it's sort of like Sleeping Beauty meets the Matterhorn.
Yeah.
I love that. I love that. I sincerely love that.
It's just like I'm not sure what happens in it, but it is cold in there.
Yeah.
It's very cold.
Like you see your breath. Like you walk in and immediately see your breath. I love it. Everything about it. Love it, love it, love it.
I sort of like looking around the room for like what's...
As you're like, you look up at my Matterhorn poster. Yeah. The Matterhorn. No, that's a real one. I know.
I keep just looking around. I'm going to shut my eyes and
that's
say,
okay too, though, if that inspires something.
Like, the snack maze.
The snack maze is great. I don't know even what it means, but I would want to go. And wouldn't we all want to get on the snack maze? You know what I just thought of for you?
What?
This isn't fair because I'm feeding you an idea. But what if there was like a ride version of that phrase in that band that you played for me when we were in the car where you were like, they make that sound so good. If that was like a ride.
I wish I could swim and sleep like the shark. It's an Unknown Mortal Orchestra song. I wish I could swim and sleep like a shark does. I'd fall to the bottom and I'd hide till the... he's like falling asleep and slowly floating away.
Oh, right? If you could take a ride that basically like quickly hypnotize you into a state where you're... It would basically be like a meditation, almost like a meditation ride where you just like float and drift and you're like totally rejuvenated after 5 minutes of this feeling of just like pure...
There is no better answer than that one.
Okay, so... Unknown Mortal Immortal Orchestra?
Unknown Mortal.
Mortal Orchestra.
Orchestra Ride. We'll see now there.
Ride. Oh, that's so interesting and specific.
Great album, gang.
Because I just thought about that when you said it. And it is. It's almost like if someone could make a ride of that, that'd be fantastic.
What you said, what I was thinking after, that would be like some kind of like infinity slide. Where you slide and then you hit some kind of plateau and then you get to slide again and you go around a corner.
God, I like infinity slide too. This is tough. You know what I want to do? Modes of transportation include infinity slide.
Okay.
Like you could get to your destination on an infinity slide.
Nice.
And now I need two more.
I would take a ride on your fuzzy dog, Scott.
Love it. Couldn't agree more.
With a saddle. Just ride around town. It would take a while.
Which is it's not so different from the polar bear dog that I've said before that Scott looks like the polar bear dog Mike characterized.
Yeah.
That's what I wish. You could blow him up to the size where you could just ride him everywhere. So I couldn't agree more. Love it.
Boy, then it would just be like, what do you call that? Like transportation where you...
Teleporting.
Yeah, that's totally. It. That's it.
Same.
Then you don't have to waste any time.
an actual teleporting, not teleporting like in Harry Potter where it makes you throw up because you actually have this like several second experience that's like somehow really upsetting.
No, it's like maybe you're thirsty.
Yeah.
Maybe
yeah.
you need some water when you're done.
Yeah, you're a little thirsty, but there's nothing upsetting. It's not upsetting teleporting. Okay, final category is you could... If you could give... Oh, this is tough because I was going to say something, but like so much of life has to be about learning your experiences for yourself.
Ask it anyway.
Honestly, if you could, this is real. I've never asked huge, big questions like this, but why not? Like kind of morally speaking, if you could undo like something that feels like it's sort of wrong with the world, could be really small, could be big, but just three things. Could be like, I wish people said Gesundheit more when they, you know, I wish there was more acknowledgement of sneezes. Two, I wish there were more, less economic disparity, stuff like that.
I wish that I could control the environmental pollutants across the world. These will keep me up at night. I wish that the products and foods that were available to us in the United States were governed by a larger understanding.
That it was less about commercialism and capitalism.
About the dollar and more about making sure that products are safe.
Okay.
Well, and then I wished. God, this sounds so plotty, but I could stay awake nights thinking about the military industrial complex.
Yeah. No. Listen. Tame that beast. That's literally all I wrote because hopefully I'll remember what that means in a second. Okay, tell me, don't look.
Oh, I'm not looking.
It doesn't, by the way, have any bearing on anything, but tell me when to stop.
Stop.
Okay. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. I'm going to be busy. Okay, I'm pausing this. To you will seem as if no time has passed. Okay, it's with great pleasure that I reveal this future unto you. Like, this is scripture. Mm-hmm. Okay, the first thing I want to say is, I never have a plan for this, is that a lot of this makes a lot of sense to me. Number one, you know, the MASH portion being mansion, apartment, shack, and house.
Oh, I see.
What I'm going to say is you do have an apartment. I'm going to go ahead and say your apartment is in Manhattan.
Oh.
Because it makes sense. You have a lovely apartment in Manhattan.
Wonderful.
That's also the location of this clothing store that you have.
I see.
With all of these wonderful items for the home, for the body, et cetera. Some of which you may have even sewn yourself.
Oh, I see.
Because you've had time. I mean, this is like, a lot of this is really coming together in a very specific, purposeful way.
It feels right.
Including the fact that you have revolutionized the world. And now in the United States, we have very mindful food and personal products that are very safe for us. Probably you carry some of those in your store.
Nice.
So you're kind of taking over Manhattan. when the time comes for you to travel back in time, I think if there's a way for you to infinity slide back into the past to experience the James concert, that is definitely where you're headed. But you can also just infinity slide anywhere you want. That sounds so fun.
So fun.
Oh my God. Infinity slide everywhere. Which takes us to, in fact, you can infinity slide your way all the way to Disneyland, where when you get there, if you're tired or feeling anxious or frazzled,
yay!
Unknown Mortal Orchestra ride. Get on there anytime you want.
It's meditate
perfect,
away.
Floating, beautiful. And you're sharing all of this and more with circa 80s Anthony Michael Hall.
With a small boy.
So congratulations. Possibly he still has braces. Possibly he has braces.
There's nothing more touching than a teenager with braces or a toddler with glasses.
I agree with both of those things, and that is one of the reasons that my podcast logo has braces. is that it's very charming to me and reminds me very much of being a young person. Thank you so much for doing the podcast,
what
buddy.
A pleasure, buddy.
It's so fun.
Yeah, it's really fun. Thanks for having me.
And thanks for weighing in on that that advice and stuff. We really hit it. All creatures great and small. Lots of big picture stuff, lots of little picture stuff. Good times.
Great fun.
Love
thanks
you, buddy.
So much. I appreciate it.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
As always, the JV Club theme song is Back Before We Were Brittle by the amazing Say Hi.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.